Howdy, listener, and thanks for tuning into our podcast, The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. My name is Izzy.
And my name is David. Each week, one of us will pick a movie that the other has not seen. We will deep dive into our individual takes and historical background of the movie.
Please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at TML A Journey Through Cinema and Twitter at TML A Journey.
Welcome to episode one of season two of The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. Today we're traveling to 2011, where we're going to discuss the film Attack the Block, starring John Boyega, Jodie Whittaker, Nick Frost, Alex Esmel, and Leon Jones. Written and directed by Joe Cornish, the movie is about South London teenagers defending their neighborhood from malevolent extraterrestrials. All right, so Izzy, why did you choose this film?
I chose this film because recently on his Instagram, John Boyega stated that, yes, there will be Attack the Block 2. And I remember I was like, oh my God, Dad, they're making another Attack the Block. This is so cool. And you're like, oh, okay, I've never seen the first one. And it blew my mind that you've never seen the first one.
It was on my list to get to eventually.
I was like, okay, I got to show you this one, and this will definitely be a movie for our podcast. You know what? This is going to be our season opener. This is going to be amazing. You're going to love it. You're going to watch it. And you're going to be amazed by it. Were you amazed by it?
Was I amazed by it? Yes, I really enjoyed the film. It was a great romp. It's funny. It's when you have a movie like this that can be fun, enjoyable. It can have its light moments, its darker moments. It can mix in a little bit of social commentary in with it. It can do a bunch of different things. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
It also surprised me that you hadn't seen it because a lot of our family members / friends have also seen it, and they were just as excited for me as with me, and it was kind of blew my mind that you were usually the movie guy.
So this movie has gotten a reputation as being a cult classic, a modern cult classic. And I was wondering, what is your interpretation of what that means? What makes a movie a cult classic?
Sometimes people narrow it down to just, it got good critical reviews when it was in the box office, but didn't meet the box office returns. And so it was ultimately a bomb. And then eventually people picked it up. That's not necessarily the true aspect of it, because there are a lot of cult classics that didn't have good reviews. This one got really good reviews critically, but it didn't make its box office returns, and it didn't really have a lot of good audience reviews. But then it got picked up later, and now it's like a really big thing. And I think that's kind of what I feel makes a cult classic, is a movie that a fandom grows around later on in its life.
So one of the things about cult films definitions, and you're going to get people who have their own definitions, and there's some people have tried to define it. Some people have written books about cult films. There's like midnight cult films, which are the horror films or schlocky films that are made on B movies, and they're not really good, but you love the type of film they are. There's the genre type of cult classic. There's the, like you described here, a movie that was, people who saw it reviewed it really well and received it very well, but just didn't grab an audience. When people ask me, what do I think about cult films? I always like to know, what are we talking about? We're talking about the cult films that are genre that have built up this legacy over years because of the genre that they're attached to, and they're a really good vampire film, or they're famous because they were a really bad film, like some of the films from Ed Wood and things like that. Is that the type of cult film we're talking about? Or is the cult film we're talking about the film like today, which was received well, never found its audience, and then slowly found its audience through streaming. I think the thing is that once it started to stream in 2014, you started hearing more and more and more about it. And I think that's where it really found its audience.
Yes, streaming does play a really big part in this movie's rise to glory. And I think that does muddle the water a little bit when it comes to cult classics, or what we would say cult classics are, because for the longest time, you know, there wasn't streaming services, so there was a clearer definition and a clearer process, and now you can pretty much call anything that, you know, Netflix posts on, you know, a movie that's only 10 years old, that Amazon posts on their Prime Video, where, you know, more people get to watch it, now we're calling that a cult classic. But the thing that might muddle the waters a little bit is that this movie is only 10 years old.
Well, that's why we get the term that I don't like to hear a lot, but I do understand why it came out with a modern cult classic. And when you put the word modern and classic together, it's kind of like, ugh. But I understand what they're trying to say. They're trying to say it's things are being turned over so fast nowadays that 10 years ago is a long time ago. I mean, you see them pull out their cell phones in this movie and you see how the certain people reacted and certain things were being done. That was very indicative 10 years ago that sometimes didn't really quite fit into our life now. It's almost like that movie was closer to people who lived in the 90s than people who live now. I don't agree with you totally about streaming services. Streaming services have just replaced the video store, which is what back from the 80s, 90s, 2000s was where cult classics or cult films were able to get a new audience. You have to cross a certain threshold of fans to be considered a cult film. There's a lot of great films who never find a cult, even a cult following, because they never hit that threshold of a certain amount of cultural consciousness. Eventually, certain films cross over.
I was going to say, and you can make an argument that this particular movie does reach that number, quote unquote, of fans, because major news sources were saying, hey, guess what, guys? Attack the Block 2, you know?
Yeah, and I think another thing, too, is that it brought us John Boyega. You could point to this film in a number of people's careers, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera, as a monumental point, because it got them noticed in Hollywood. And then I think there's like a little bit of the feeding itself. It feeds itself. People want to know who John Boyega was from Star Wars, so they went back and watched this film. I think people wanted to know who Joe Cornish was, so they went and realized he'd written some famous screenplays. Like a good cult classic film does, too, is usually when you go back and look at them, there's usually people in those two behind the camera, in front of the camera, that move on into Hollywood and filmmaking and become not necessarily stars, but they become they end up with really good, strong careers.
Yeah, because you're right. You know, John Boyega, like you just said, he's famous for Star Wars and Pacific Rim, Small Axe. He has a new movie filming right now that he keeps promoting, which I'm really excited about watching. Stephen Price, he wrote the score for this movie,
yeah.
And he's famous for the Gravity score, which won him a BAFTA and an Oscar for original score. Like you said, George Cornish, he wrote...
George?
God, I can't even get his name right even when I'm saying it. You were talking about Joe Cornish, and he wrote and directed The Kid Who Would Become King, which we watched and we really enjoyed.
And for a kids movie, I was really surprised.
With Sir Patrick Stewart, yeah. He wrote the Ant-Man screenplay. He has a screenplay credit for Ant-Man. He did Tintin, Adventures of Tintin, which was my favorite movie for a really long time because I had a crazy obsession with Tintin. He wrote that. And so he's known for a lot of things he's known for a lot of screenplays and behind the stage stuff that has kind of formed these fun, quirky movies.
When you brought this film to me and said, let's do this film, I was super excited because, A, I'd heard a lot about it when it came out. This is going to sound so 2011, but it was on a lot of the message boards that I was reading about films. And it's about, hey, you got to check this out. I just never got around to checking it out. So, again, like I said, it's on my list. The cool thing was it was actually one of the few films that's been on my list for a long time that I kind of knew what the story was about, but people hadn't told me what the story was. So I didn't go in there knowing exactly what was going to happen. So for me, it was like as if the movie came out last week and nobody had told me anything. So it was great. And I was totally surprised by it. I want to ask you, is that this film has been one of your favorite films for a while. So what really did you connect with on this film? Because, I mean, let's face it, it's a story that... it's an alien invasion story, which usually is not one of the storylines that you like.
You're right. I don't like alien attack films. And one of the reasons why I don't like alien attack films is because it always, to me, it seems like there's this unbeatable force, which is usually the aliens, and this team of misfits that somehow will get get above the aliens and save humanity. And it just kind of always bothers me because halfway through the movie I'm bored. But one of the reasons why I don't think I'm bored in this movie is because even though there's still this, like, there's this, you know, alien, this faceless alien mass that's coming to get them, I think one of the reasons why I really enjoyed this movie is because it has a lot of complexity for a, you know, for a silly alien invasion movie. I think it also adds kind of this uniqueness since it's kind of this, it's only in one setting.
That's true. It's not over the entire world.
They're not scientists. They're actually just teenagers from East London. And I think one of the reasons why I really enjoy this film is because it allows each character to have their own moments, brilliantly acted. And I think also for the fact that it's a funny movie with a lot of heart.
I think the thing that you were pointing to about there's a lot of humor in it. So even when there's the social commentary that comes in, that's sometimes done very pointedly and very humorously. Sometimes it's done not so humorously, like it shouldn't be. It's handled very well. And one of the things that I enjoy about alien attack films is a fun, usually a fun adventure film with a little bit of, I'm not huge into horror, but this is about as far into horror as I go, is like Alien and things like that. And just that little bit of that scare, fright stuff with a little bit of sci-fi and mixed in with this adventure story. That's usually why I like them, if they're done really well. And this story, I really enjoyed how they played with this sense of other. Because, let's face it, most alien films are replacing, in the past, this adventure film would be in a set, if it was British, it would have been set in India, and it would have been the Indian Army dealing with Native Indians that live there, and there probably would have been an uprising, and there's a big battle and war. And if the film was set in America, it would have been set in the West, and it would have been the cavalry or settlers fighting Native Americans. So in either way, it was usually a colonizing country fighting indigenous peoples. And as the 60s and 70s rolled in, meaning us, the audience, realized that, oh, wait a minute, this isn't the whole story. They started to shift, and they started to shift these stories into things like police procedurals, replaced the cop or the detective, replaced the sheriff hunting down somebody, and science fiction, it was the aliens attacking, replaced the other, and which is why you know, when the Red Scare was going on in the 50s with communism, there was alien films made. And when and now we're seeing a lot more alien films being made because of terrorism. Why I like this film, because it was able to play with the other, because you had the, in the beginning, the heroes who, people who eventually become the heroes were the other. John Boyega and the his friends were in South London, and how they're perceived by everybody else in the film and is the other, until of course literally an other shows up and then they become the heroes. And so I found that was really kind of a nice play in the film.
I also think it's important to acknowledge the fact that during this time, during like around 2008 to 2012 in British horror, there was this subculture of what
they... Not just in horror. It was in action film. I saw it in action films too, but...
Yeah. Well, there's this subculture of what they like to call hoodie horror. Hoodie is in like a, you know, your jacket. And that was this... movie, the subgenre of horror, which a group of youths and teens who were dressed in this stereotypical hood, can't see their face type thing, attack well-meaning middle class men. And this movie kind of plays is like a counter argument to that, because of the fact that we get, it's still a horror film, and we still, you know, but we get to see a little bit more of what goes on in their daily lives, and we get to see a lot of things from their point of view, and they get to be the hero this time instead of like these movies like Eden Lake and Harry Brown, which were like the two most famous movies of this subgenre, where, you know, it's it's a state being attacked by...
It's also done in American films too. There'll be somebody that shows up with a hood, a young person wearing a hoodie over them, and they're in the shadows, and it's code for menace. And so, and you see it in other aspects in the news and things like that, how people are portrayed. And I think that's one of the smartest decisions the filmmakers made. That's how they introduce the heroes first, as you see them from that classical stance of off in the distance, in the darkness, wearing their hoods, and then you start getting closer and closer, like you said. And I really enjoyed the fact that each of them had also very unique stories. You could tell that each of them had unique lives and families, which is, even though there's only like glimpses and reactions from the families, as you're moving in and you're getting to know the story and getting to care about these characters.
Yeah, I also really, like I mentioned before, I really enjoyed that this was a horror film that centered around John Boyega's character and these teenagers, because a lot of the counter arguments, quote unquote, from this genre turned into this like sad, sappy, like, this is my backstory kind of movie. And I'm really glad that, you know, Joe Cornish didn't do that.
The thing that I really enjoyed too, and which makes really a good cult movie or a good movie in general, but a good low budget film, that is, they picked their story, they had their spine, they had, and they went through the entire film on that spine of the story, and they didn't do too much. It reminded me very much like Shaun of the Dead, and it did everything it was supposed to do within the story. So everything was fleshed out within the story. But like that film, Shaun of the Dead, and this film, you're seeing an alien attack from a very localized point of view, and or a zombie attack from a very localized point of view, and you don't see the generals trying to figure out what was going on, or the people in the Air Force trying to figure out. None of that stuff is important for the story, so they didn't even bother showing it. Even the police responses are very localized. And so I think that's one of the things that really makes it feel even more real and more enjoyable, is that you're seeing it a very focused point of view. And it's really hard to do sometimes when there's so much you want to do, and they did a really good job of doing it.
I also think they did a really good job of using the location to spice up the suspense and horror. That's all taken place around in and around this apartment block. And I think it's really interesting that they decided to use the elevator as like that, the elevator and the lights in the hallway going dim, due to just, I don't know if that's a British thing, but they have like a light in the hallway that they click and then it like stays on for 2 minutes and then it goes down.
To save energy.
And I think they used those types of like elevator as a confined space and the lights are going dim to create this like suspense out of real life. And one of the characters is stuck in a garbage outside of the apartment complex for like most of the movie.
Dumpster
being tracked by one of these aliens. And it's like, that's something that I could realistically see myself doing. And it adds a lot of suspense to it.
Yeah. And I think the thing too, is that there are some people in this story that you could say that are bad guys in society, but this movie doesn't judge them. Their reactions to the situation are also very honest and true. And that's what I really enjoy about this film is that you can see everybody's point of view and their reactions make sense. They're not like, okay, on page 45, we need to make sure that this happens. So this character is going to say this or do this. So this happens. And so you're like, but you really haven't explained why this character would do this. Everything felt very authentic. I get nervous when they start ramping up towards the resolution, because that's usually where the films like this kind of falter. Like you said, they usually go schmaltzy or they try to make some big statement, and this film did a really great job of walking that edge.
I also think one of the reasons why it feels so authentic is due to the casting.
Oh, yeah.
Because the casting were all teenagers. They were selected from drama classes in London. They lived close to the places that they filmed in. You know, famously, John Boyega found out about this film on the internet. An ad placed it on the internet. And so it kind of adds to this authenticness, since they were all probably the same age as their characters. You know, the writer interviewed various kids as well and go, if there was an alien attack, what weapons would you use? And those weapons are found in this movie. And, you know, and they're very home-based items, you know, a baseball bat, a kitchen knife, you know, fireworks, you know, a lighter, you know, things that are found in the home, especially during the time where this movie is placed, which is Guy Fawkes Night, you know, November 5th, which is if you know anything about it as an American, it's a firework holiday. And so it totally adds to this realness of it when the people who are portraying these characters are portraying realistic people.
So this is an alien film. Do you think the aliens worked?
I did think these aliens worked. And one of the reasons why I don't like alien movies is because I always get drawn out of the movie when it comes to aliens, because they're usually a play on the really tall, big-headed green guys. You know, they might have bug wings or something like that, but it's always a variation on that kind of archetype. And one of the things that I loved about this movie is that they were like bears. They were creepy because, you know, they're pitch black, not giving anything away. They're just pitch black. They're described in the movie as blacker than black. This is the big, you know, the darkest black you've ever seen. And the only like distinction from the shadows is their bright blue fluorescent mouths and teeth. And that just, it always creeps me out when they jump out, because I'm not noticing them. But if you rewatch them, they're there the whole time. That's, you know.
Yeah. There's times when you're supposed to see them. And then there's times when they're there and you realize, oh, they were there the whole time, and they become revealed later. I thought they worked in the sense of you never really found out the origin of the alien. You never found out exactly what was going on. I thought it was funny that they kind of solved how the aliens must, the type of society or structure that the aliens have in their world by watching National Geographic specials. And they're like, it's like this type of animal. Cause that's, when you think about it, if you were in alone and you had no contact with the authorities, you would, you, what would you fall back on? Probably all the National Geographic specials you'd watch growing up, or you'd pull out your phone and look up something on Wikipedia or something and go,
black bears, but with glowing teeth, question mark.
Yeah, and see what people said. And I think that's one of the things that made this movie work for me, is that they had their assumptions. You don't know if they were right or wrong. Some of them were kind of proved right by the way the story went, but you know that some of them aren't true. And I really enjoyed the fact that, they were a bunch, you know, a pothead was telling them exactly, well, it's like these moths, you know, and they're all like, what? And he explains everything. And then they realize, oh, he might be right. I'm glad they didn't go too deep into the alien structure of their society. Sometimes when movies like this go really into explaining who the aliens are and what exactly everything is, that's when they lose me, because it's usually like, oh, that's it. But there's this mystery about the aliens. It was a lot of fun to watch.
There was a play on the mad scientist who always tells, you know, everybody thinks is crazy, but, you know, is telling the truth. And one of my favorite parts of that is that the play on the crazy dude, the crazy scientist dude, was the stoner head.
Yeah.
Who took one zoology course in college.
Yeah, and he's the one that figured out, oh, this is what the aliens are. It's like you could see the references to earlier alien attack films and go, oh, this character is in lieu of this character, you know.
You're given a clue that this is like a remaking of those old alien movies, when the title card comes out, because that title card where it says attack the block and then it has the beam of light coming down is totally reminiscent of like the 1950s, 1960s alien movies. And you go, okay, I'm in here for a ride. It's just, if you really think about it, all those characters fit all the archetypes in any of those 50s alien movies.
A little bit of Invasion of the Body Snatchers and a little bit of War of the Worlds. There's even a little bit of The Thing referenced in there, the original Thing referenced in there. And I just find it really fun that these films are referenced but not copied. Has this movie inspired you to go back and check some of those films?
Some of those alien films?
Yeah, like from the 50s and 60s or even like the 80s and 90s. Just go back and, or some of the current ones, just go back and look at them.
Not particularly, because I think one of the reasons why I enjoyed this film is that it's like has layers. And the last alien movie that I watched was, besides this movie, was Independence Day.
Okay, so I was talking about movies that are made well.
Well, actually, no. Well, I mean, but
Independence Day the original or Independence Day the Resurgence?
The original. But now that I think about it, I retake my answer, because it hasn't inspired me to go watch them before we do this podcast. But while I was doing research about what inspired this movie and all this stuff, there was a lot of like the Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I was doing a lot of research on that because I'm really interested. When my favorite part of American history is the Cold War. I don't know why, but I love the whole dynamics, and I like McCarthyism, and I just find
we don't like it. You like studying it.
Yeah, I like studying it. I like studying McCarthyism. When I was doing some research and Invasions of the Body Snatchers came up, when I was reading the synopsis of this movie and doing a little bit of research about how this movie might have inspired Attack the Block and things like that, I got really interested, and that was like the one alien movie that I was like, I should probably go back and watch this, because this is a really interesting movie for just the time and also just sounding interesting in general.
So I think, honestly, you should go back and watch more than just Invasion of the Body Snatchers. There are a lot of films made in the 50s, science fiction films, where they really are – talking about the Red Scare, you know, communism, and using either alien invasion or some form of alien or science fiction story to process it and speak to it. Day the Earth Stood Still and a couple other films. And so I think some of those films too are you see how they structured their stories, how they built their stories, and you see the references in both modern horror and modern science fiction. The most common, of course, are like the ones that kind of cross both, like the Alien series and this movie.
Well, does Alien count? Because you know me, I love that film.
Alien counts. Alien and Alien 2 or Aliens. And I really enjoyed both those because I enjoyed both those films for different reasons. Those are two films that use the alien construct to discuss two different things.
We did kind of touch on this, but do you think this is a good alien attack film?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like I said, I really enjoyed the fact that they kept it simple. They moved the story along. They didn't try to over-explain everything because they told it from the point of view of the main characters. And if the main characters wouldn't have had knowledge of something, they don't have that knowledge. And everything that every piece of knowledge that they have about the aliens by the end of the film, they earned. They found out some way. I think that's really good screenwriting and direction. I have to give Joe Cornish props for that. Because you would be tempted because of the where you place the story, some of the commentary that you're talking about, social commentary, and some of the ways that the story is structured to start layering in more and more. And they didn't do that. They were very careful not to overdo it. I'm kind of curious on what they're going to do with number two, because that is also sometimes where. Well, we didn't get a chance to say that in the first one, so let's say this in the second one, or we didn't get a chance to do this in the first one, so let's do this in the second one. So I don't think it's going to be an issue, so I hope not, but I'm really excited to see it.
If you were magically called up and said, you have to either plan out the story or write the screenplay, how you, watching the first one, and using the knowledge that you have about alien films and things like that, how would you comprise the second one?
Yeah, I would be very careful not just to have fan service through the sequel.
It'd be so fun if they did like a Drew Barrymore and Scream. It's like John Boyega, he's part of the writing team, he's producing it, he's on it, he's super excited, and then in the first five seconds he gets eaten by an alien and we're just like, what? It would be hilarious if he pulled a Drew Barrymore.
That would be fun. I think the thing too that when we watch films like this, I think the reason why like alien attack films or horror films or science fiction films is that usually we enjoy them because they can, if they're done well and they're done right, they get to talk about, they have the normal part of the genre, the horror or the scares, the ride, the thrills, and there's usually some form of social commentary mixed in that they're talking about things like the Invasion of the Body Snatchers wasn't just a scary science fiction film. They were actively talking about the why people had the fear of the Communist Party. People really felt the Communist Party was going to kind of take over America and make everybody faceless drones. Well, what's the movie about? It's about an alien that comes in and makes people that you thought you knew, your loved ones, faceless drones. Or not faceless drones, but like emotionless drones. And so I think that I think it's one of those things where it's like you can really make comments and work with inside the genre. And and this film did a really good job talking about what's going on in London, and not just London, but around the world with how certain people are being portrayed, not only in film, but in life, and how they're treated. And it was a really great, not only a really great ride, but you got to think deeply about some things without being preached to.
Yeah, the line that sticks with me the most every time I read this movie is, paraphrase, it's like the government's not going to do anything because it's these aliens are probably government experiments to come down and kill us black boys.
Yeah, because they sent the drugs and they sent the guns.
John Boyega's character's Moses says this when they are, you know, in the middle of this climax, and I think it's a really important line in this whole film.
So we were talking about how things turn so fast earlier. Do you think this film holds up even though it's only 10 years old?
I do think this movie holds up really well. As you know, even though it is 10 years old, a lot of the things that they are commenting on are prevalent today.
I would say even more prevalent today.
Even more prevalent today, especially since John Boyega is the main character and he's such a big voice in the in Black Lives Matter and in those Black Lives Matter protests that happened really recently in London, and he was a major part of that coming about. I think it adds a little bit more of a layer to it.
Yeah, and I think the thing that there's certain movies that when they come out, you go, well, this movie is commenting on a lot of society. And then as society keeps moving, you start going, whoa, this movie was really ahead of its time. And then like 20 years, 30 years later, you're watching it again and you go, oh my God, this movie really hit the nail on the head. You thought it had gone so far off into social commentary on some things. You're like, oh, this movie was really good. And then you start realizing how layered it is. And then one of those movies for me is Network. It came out in the 70s, talking about how the news channels started shifting towards entertainment and not news. And look where we have now. We have literally news cable networks that are selling news as entertainment, not as actual news. And so it was like, you watch that in that movie and you go, oh wow, this started in the 70s. And in a different way, this movie is very similar to that, where it's talking about issues that are still very prevalent today, like how people are perceived, how the actual opportunities that certain people have in their society, and how sometimes the systems that are meant to protect us do not protect all. And so I thought it was a very interesting way of melding that into this story. So would you recommend this film?
I would recommend this film. And I think this film, for anybody who likes quirky sci-fi films, would love this film. Anything by Edgar Wright, if you like anything by him, I would recommend this film, because his DNA is throughout this movie, since Joe Cornish worked on a lot of his films. They're really good friends, things like that. So if you like his stuff, he actually drew Stephen Price, who we mentioned earlier, did the score for Baby Driver. So a lot of people who worked on this film have also worked on Edgar Wright films. So if you really like his stuff, I would recommend this film, because it's right up your alley. I also, if you are a John Boyega fan, watch this movie. And he's only like 19 in this movie, and you can totally tell that he's going to be a leading man one day. And he is a leading man, no matter what Star Wars is. And so I definitely recommend watching this movie.
All right, that was a great conversation about Attack the Block, our first film for season 2 of The Movie Log. I really hope you guys enjoyed it.
If you did enjoy it, please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review. You can also follow us on Facebook under The Movie Log, TML, A Journey Through Cinema on Instagram, or TML, A Journey on Twitter. If you have a recommendation for any movies, we are always compiling lists. You can comment or email us at tmlajourneythroughcinema@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.